Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Chinmayananda, known as Chin. Chin took sannyas in 1975 and worked as a karate teacher in Pune and as an electrician in Rajneeshpuram before becoming a professional tennis coach and a fitness instructor. I'm so happy to have Chin on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Chin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Swaram. Nice to be here with you.
To start, Chin, tell us a little bit about you and how you came across Osho.
Well, I was born and raised in Jersey City, New Jersey, across the river from Manhattan. And there were four children in my family. My parents were very, very religious, very Catholic. My mother from Italian descent, my father from Irish German. And they were very devout Catholics. Consequently, I was raised Catholic. I went 16 years of Catholic school, and I would say I was a fairly devout Catholic when I was young. Of course, that all went away as I got older and went to university and got on the road traveling. So. So that's kind of my background. New York metropolitan area, middle class, blue collar middle class, Catholic raised. I had a fairly good childhood. The parents were strict, but my mother was very loving, and I think my childhood was fairly normal in my neighborhood.
How, from that Catholic background, you came across Osho?
I always loved to travel. I was traveling a lot after I graduated university, and I was actually happily living in Laos in 1974-75. Started karate training in Japan in 73, and I used Japan as my base in the 70s, and so I would teach English, study karate, and then save money and then travel. So I was in 74-75, I was in Laos happily living, teaching English. And suddenly Vietnam finished and I had to leave Laos, and which was terrible for me because I really loved Laos. And I was in contact with my brother who was living in Swayambhu outside of Kathmandu, Nepal. And so I surprised him with a visit after I had to leave Laos. And so that was a nice visit with him. And then he had to go to New York on business, selling these little Tibetan silk purses and which he was making in Swayambhu with the Tibetans. And so when he was in New York selling these purses, I was back in Kathmandu teaching English as I did around Asia. And he came back about 4 months later with this keen interest to go to Pune and see this guy, Rajneesh. He had read some books in New York and met some people that were involved with him, and he said, "Let's go down to Pune." And I hadn't been to India before, so I was very agreeable. He had already been to Pune with a Goenka Vipassana meditation retreat, and he had been around India. So me not having been to India and having my brother take me down there was kind of easy way to see India. So we left Nepal and overland down to Pune, seeing all the sights on the way. And when we got to Pune, it was like, wow, this is unbelievable. And listening to Bhagwan speak in those days, he was Bhagwan. I still have a hard time calling him Osho, so forgive me. Listening to him speak and was just like, well, for lack of a better word, enlightening. And very enjoyable. And we loved being there. The people around him were fabulous. We were welcomed comfortably. And we were both, my brother was a karate teacher, was into karate also. So we were practicing together. And we did a few darshans on the carport demonstrating karate for Osho, and that was a lot of fun. And in those days, he used a little flashlight. So after we did this serious exerting karate exercise, my brother and I, we knelt in front of him, and he put this light on our third eye and did all this stuff. So it was quite interesting and unique. Yes, but that's how I got there. It was from my brother saying, let's go down and see this guy in Pune.
You mentioned that you were a karate teacher and your brother as well. So how was for you to practice and teach karate in a Buddha field in the presence of an enlightened master?
Yeah, it was wonderful. The community itself is so open and loving that all the martial artists I encountered in Pune 1, and there were several, which became the samurai department. There were seven of us when that started. Yeah, they were all just really heartfelt people. And so it's a lot of fun to train with people that are serious, but yet very loving, you know. And that isn't to say we weren't competitive, and we did train very hard. But, you know, the bottom line is there was no evil and no serious aggression. So it was very enjoyable. And then when we trained all the guards, everybody, of course, was very attentive and wanting to learn, which is always nice when you're a teacher. So it was a wonderful experience teaching in Pune 1. And my brother actually taught a lot more than I did there, but it was a lot of fun.
Did I hear correctly? You mentioned samurai department. Is that right?
Yes, the samurai department. When it started, there was only seven of us. Shiva was the Bhagwan's main bodyguard, now called Yu Milne, and he was asked by Lakshmi to organize the seven martial artists to guard Bhagwan's house inside and around his garden. I think that was 1979, and because there was a threat. I think Lakshmi and the ladies were very worried about Bhagwan's, being taken care of, guarded well. So it started with martial artists, and then it quickly became, because there were only seven of us and we guarded from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., which was very difficult, you know, being alert and attentive for 12 hours all night long when you're a day person like me. So it was very difficult for us. And eventually the samurai department became kind of a guard unit that just guarded around his house, as opposed to the Krishna guards who guarded the entire ashram.
Now let's jump and talk about something else. So I know you mentioned you were with Osho since 1975, and then when Osho suddenly left and moved to the USA, it came as a shock for many sannyasins who possibly thought the Pune 1 would never end. I know that you took that flight with Osho. You were there when he left. Can you share with us that part of the story?
Wow, yeah. Well, it's I'll start kind of from the beginning, and if any of my old friends are listening, they've heard this story probably at least once, so forgive me. At the time, I was, it was 1981, Vivek was my girlfriend at the time, and she came up to me all excited and wide-eyed and thrilled, and she said, I have a secret, we're going to move to America, we're going to move to New Jersey. And my response was immediate because I couldn't, it hit me right in the guts. And I say that not in a positive way. And of course, she was very sensitive and she read me instantly. And she said, what's wrong? I said, well, New Jersey, I'm from New Jersey and New Jersey sucks. You know, to me, this was a disaster. You know, I never wanted to go back to America, never mind New Jersey. Yeah, I was not happy about that at all. And consequently, which I didn't realize what was going to happen, she went in and sometime soon after spoke with Bhagwan and said, with Osho and said, oh, Chin says New Jersey sucks. And that night I was guarding outside his room, and Sheila went in and did the work because Lakshmi was out looking for the new commune. And she comes out and she comes right up to my face and she says, "You shut up about New Jersey. Don't you talk about New Jersey, you know, like this. You're really angry in my face." And I was kind of shocked about that. And so unbeknownst to me, I made an enemy. And she told me this story about her and Chinmayo wanting to buy this house in New Jersey when they were there as young, kind of a young couple. And the house that they wanted to buy turned out to be what we called the castle, which was this beautiful house in Montclair, New Jersey, on a hill, which had a straight view to Manhattan. Beautiful property, beautiful house. So that's basically why we went to New Jersey. Sheila needed to buy this house. And to me, it was a disaster. I mean, I knew soon as I heard we were leaving Pune, for me, it was a disaster. So that's my story on leaving Pune One. And on the plane, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was very exciting. This was a big deal. You know, there was several of us guards and all that. And it was fun being on the flight and arriving into Manhattan and New Jersey with Osho and, you know, that whole experience. It was a privilege and an honor. And so that part of it was amazing. But for me, the bottom line was a very negative event.
I've heard so many different stories about Osho leaving India for the USA. Did Osho say anything on that flight or in other circumstances where you have heard from him directly talking about that?
No. And Osho was upstairs. They rented the entire second floor of the 747. So there was only a few people around him up in first class there. The rest of us were back in economy. So, but I did, my brother and I did go up to the first class cabin where Bhagwan Osho was, and we took a bunch of photos. And so all those photos you see on the plane were shot by my brother and me with our cameras, with our film. We turned the film in and, of course, never saw it again. But no, we never got to speak with him. But just took some photos, a bunch of photos, and then left. So no, I didn't have any conversation with him. I did have a little bit of conversation with him when I taught him how to drive in New Jersey. You know, when we first arrived there, that summer we arrived June 1st, 1981. He wanted to learn how to drive, so I was asked to help him with that.
I'd love to hear about the driving part, but before we get that, what's your take on it? What's your take on Osho leaving India for the USA?
Well, my take is that he was bamboozled by Sheila. There were so many places in the world we could have gone where we would have been accepted. And even in America, there were places where we could have gone that we would have probably been accepted. But where we ended up in Central Oregon was, to me, a disaster right away. I didn't like it right away. I didn't like the land. I didn't like where it was. It was dry. It was cold. You know, it was wet. It was hot. It was muddy. It wasn't a very nice, inviting, warm place. When Sheila started to alienate our neighbors, and as you saw in Wild Wild Country, things became really terrible. There was a lot of fear in that community, I have to say. Yes, there was a lot of love, and that's what kept me there for 3 years. But there was also a lot of fear. I mean, it was you couldn't talk openly about anything without worrying about somebody going to the office and ratting you out or telling on you, you know, that you might have said something negative or something, and then maybe getting kicked out. It was very, very different than Pune One, the community spirit and the community, the joy of the community as it was in Pune One. Yes, there were a lot of people on the ranch that I've met after that thought the ranch was the best thing that ever happened to them. And I'm sure everybody has a different experience, just like, you know, they do with Bhagwan, with Osho. Mine was, as I said, it was no fun being there.
In terms of Osho leaving India for the USA, what was the reason why?
My understanding is Sheila was out there looking for the new commune quite intensively. And my understanding was she wasn't able to find a place that was agreeable, where the locals wanted us. I think politically, Osho was persona non grata. And so she didn't find a piece of land that was good enough. And I know Sheila wanted to go to America and she wanted to buy this property. So that I know for a fact, because she told me. That is why I think we went to America. I think, we couldn't find, Bhagwan always talked a lot about the new commune. I don't know if you heard any of his discourses. He often mentioned in the new commune, we would do this. In the new commune, we would do that. So because Pune, one, it was so overcrowded and we really needed a bigger space for the fast growing community, that we needed to go somewhere, and India wasn't obliging us. So, you know, Sheila was in power, and she got us to go to the United States. So that's my take on why we left India. I didn't know anything about taxes or about, you know, this or that. I mean, there's lots of speculation, but from my understanding is, I mean, also people thought, well, he had physical problems. He had to go to America for, you know, for medical reasons and this and that. But I don't believe that. I think we went because basically Sheila got it in his head to go there, and he allowed it. Bhagwan to me was a Taoist. He allowed people to do things and allowed things to situations to happen. And I think that's what he did in this case. He allowed himself to be taken to America.
That makes lots of sense, definitely. And basically the commune was expanding. More and more people were going to Pune. There was no more space. There was need of a new place. And India wasn't an option. I think Lakshmi was in charge of finding a land and she couldn't find it. So that's why then she pushed for the USA. Okay, great.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's go back to the driving bit. So you mentioned that you taught Osho to drive, and this may come as a surprise for many people who don't know Osho, but he was actually very passionate about driving, and it seems he went for long drives during his time in Oregon. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It was a surprise to me. We were in New Jersey in the castle in Montclair, New Jersey. We had this a beautiful Corniche Rolls Royce was given to Bhagwan, or Sheila bought it or whatever. I don't know how we got it. It was a beautiful car. It's a convertible. So I was in charge of taking care of the car, getting it serviced, clean, etc. And also I was asked to help him drive, learn how to drive. Recently, somebody said to me, oh, I know Bhagwan knew how to drive when he was young. And so you really didn't teach him how to drive. And I have news for everyone. His driving skills were marginal. In hindsight, I thought this was the first time he ever drove a car. So what we would do is myself, Vivek, Osho, Dr. Shunyo, were in the car. I drove. I found a place that was open and where there were no cars parked, and that he could practice driving. Because that's what he told me he wanted to do, or Vivek told me he wanted to do. So I found this place, a big parking lot in a big park nearby. And so we changed over. I went into the passenger seat and he got into behind the wheel. And so I took him through how to drive and tell him get used to the brakes and this and that, you know, and really slow. So we drove around the parking lot. We did that for a couple of days, you know, then I would get back behind the wheel and drive home. Because New Jersey is quite a crowded place, especially in that area close to Manhattan. So it's, traffic's very heavy. There's a lot of cars. There's a lot of people. So I would drive home. One day he said, I'm driving home. Vivek and I look at each other. It's like, oh my God. And she was like, I don't think so. She called him Cuddles. I don't think so, Cuddles. I think it's better if Chin drives home, you know. And like, no, I'm driving home. So, okay, what are we going to do? He wants to drive home. So he drives home. And it was like, it was very scary, I have to say, because I didn't know when we were driving around New Jersey, he was driving. I never knew what he saw and what he didn't see. Like, for example, we would be coming down the road. I would try to make sure kept to the speed limit. He liked to go fast, so kept to the speed limit and all of that. So we'd be approaching a red light, for example, and we're going full speed up to, you know, and I see the light. Of course, I anticipate. I look well ahead when I drive, and I try to anticipate things. You know, we're getting closer and closer to this red light, and he's not stopping. So I'm like, Bhagwan, do you see the red light? And then suddenly hits the brakes, you know, and it's like, oh, I wonder if what would have happened if I didn't say that, you know, there's a red light up there. So it was kind of scary. There were times when I had to grab the wheel because we were going to hit something, which was, you know, what can I say? I mean, I didn't want to hit anything, so I had to grab the wheel to avoid hitting something. And in New Jersey, we drive on the different side than in India. So I would always be telling him, okay, you know, stay to the right, because that's the side that we drive on, you know. And so whenever we come out of, make a turn or whatever, you know, stay to the right. And we were once coming around off out of the neighborhood, a street onto a big highway. And it was a big, like 360 degree kind of entrance up to the highway, big looping 360 degree entrance to the highway, to this big highway. He's getting closer and closer as we go around this big circle to enter the highway. He's getting closer and closer to the curb. And I'm like, oh, is he going to hit the curb? Oh, I don't know. You know, do I grab the wheel? Do I not? And then boom, he hits the curb and we got shaken, you know, the whole car gets shaken. And everybody goes, you know, like this. And he recovers. Okay. Nobody said anything. And he said, you told me to stay to the right. So he kind of blamed it on me that he hit the curb on the right-hand side. So I got a giggle out of that. So it just shows you how human he was. A lot of people think he was God, but trust me, he was very human. I saw the human side of him quite a bit.
That's really hilarious. And it seems like Osho was just going, and unless you tell, and you, like you said, he would just allow things to happen and let go. So if you say go, he goes, and then it's a red light, stop, he stops, and then he says keep on the right, and he's gonna keep on the right. I don't know, it seems to me as if he reacts completely differently from what would be my reaction of the average reaction of a normal person.
Oh yeah, no question. Let's face it. I mean, Osho was not a normal person. That's not even anybody who's had any interaction with him can see that quite clearly. The guy was quite unique. His presence is, you know, his disposition. I've seen him in all kinds of circumstances, and he was quite. He's not like anybody I've ever met. You know, there was so much going on with him and around him and being with him in his presence and everything. You just never knew what was going to happen, really. He was a mystic. He could do things that I've never experienced anyone else doing before, you know, like appear to me And he could astral travel. He could get out of his body and move around and see things that were going on around him. And I know he did that because I have that experience with him and Vivek and in Pune One. And yeah, he's a powerful guy on a lot of levels that that I don't really know much about, frankly.
You made me laugh so much, you know, just imagining Osho speeding up, and it must have been so difficult for you to be there. And
yeah, it was pretty scary. You know, we're going down these big freeways in New Jersey, you know, these big highways. You have to imagine this. This is a story that I just remembered recently about driving. So we're driving down, he's driving. We're driving down this this big highway, you know, four lanes across, maybe six lanes across, I don't know. And he liked to speed. And of course, New Jersey is famous for its very serious, very tough state troopers, the state police, which patrolled the highways. I was always looking in the mirrors and, you know, checking. I was like, you know, looking constantly about, you know, danger and what possibility. I watched the speedometer quite closely. You know, you're going over the speed limit. You know, I'd tell them and this and that. And one day we were stopped by the state policeman. So I told him to pull over. He pulls over, and this state trooper, you know, gets out. He on the back of the car, we had this identifying, I don't know what you'd call it. It was a shield, a small shield that was attached to the back bumper. And it was like it was a public prosecutor's identification shield, you know. I don't know how Sheila got it or where she got it from, but it was on the back bumper. So this state trooper, he comes up, you know, I'm watching him in the mirror. And he has a good look at that shield as he comes up behind us. He walks up to, you know, the driver's side window. Bhagwan just sits there completely blank, completely neutral. And so Shunyo, who's on that side of the car, Dr. Shunyo, and he lowers his window. Now, Osho doesn't have a driver's license, you know. So anyway, he rolls. Shunyo rolls down the window and says, "Good morning, officer," you know. And the guy goes, he has a good look. He comes up, he looks at Osho, he looks at me, he looks at the vet, and he goes, "Who are you people?" And it's like, you know, Shunyo just starts talking, you know. And he's got no license, you know. The state trooper just kind of, he listens and, you know, he's looking and he just goes, "Okay, just slow down, all right?" And I mean, these guys are notorious for being badass, you know, being tough and not allowing anything to go down. And he just got back in his car and we drove away, and I, you know, tried to get Osho to stay to the speed limit till we got home, you know. But that was amazing to me that we didn't get we didn't get any kind of fine or any kind of, there was no consequence to him driving with no license and, you know, speeding and all of that, not even talking. He just you know, I watched those shows. He just sat neutral. He just sat there passively looking straight ahead, didn't look at the cop. That was it. We just drove home.
The guy was absolutely unusual behavior. And it's so beautiful that you can share these little fragments of the life of Osho where he's not on the podium, because most of us just see Osho when he talks and he's this incredible genius, this mystic, this enlightened master. But then, you know, he was driving and breaking the speed limits, interacting with the police officer and get away with it.
Yeah, that was mind-boggling to me. Least he would say, "Okay, well, you know, and who has a driver's license here?" Of course, I had one. So you drive and, you know, get this guy, you know, in the passenger side. But yeah, he was just, the cop was completely, he'd never experienced anything like it. So he had no reference, you know, and he just, said, okay, slow down. You can go like that, you know. I was like, oh man, I can't believe we got away with that.
Incredible. Okay, Gene, so let's change topic and talk about one of your passions. And so you recently retired as a tennis coach and you are also a fitness instructor. Clearly you're passionate about fitness, which is not a prominent trait in the sannyas community, I would say. This is just a general assumption. Or even in the traditional meditation community, there are not many people passionate about fitness and sport. And I've been personally involved in the fitness industry for a number of years because of my profession. I'm not a sport person, but I've been in the industry. And I'm curious to hear from you, as a sannyasin and a meditator, what is fitness for you?
Well, for me, it's acknowledging the body's needs. Movement, and if you can find something that you're passionate about and that includes movement, like for me, it's tennis now. It's been tennis for about 16 years. So fit, but to answer your question, fitness, it's just a way to maintain good health and general well-being. There's tons of research how important fitness is for longevity and how important it is even for mental health. So I don't think I need to go into anything like that. But for me, fitness is just something I've always done. I've always done it in a sports situation. To me, just going to the gym, which I have done a lot in my life, just go to the gym just to be fit, just to continue the strengthening of the joints. But it's mostly in order to be a better sports person. I don't like going to the gym. I do it because I have to. And there's a lot. It's like eating vegetables. A lot of vegetables I don't like, but I eat them because I know they're important for my health. That's basically what fitness is. And if you can do something that you enjoy and keep fit, like tennis, then I think you're pretty lucky. Yeah. So I've been very lucky. In the 70s and 80s, it was martial arts. In the 90s, it was golf. And then in the 2000s, it's been tennis. So I've always done things that I enjoyed that helped my fitness. And I've always seen that no matter what I do in terms of sport, it always seems to be, I can see the spiritual side of things, how important being in the moment is in sport. If you really want good results in anything fitness related, you have to really be in that moment completely. And that's the spiritual side of fitness for me, regardless of, you know, even if it's doing curls, you know, just pushing weight. If you're doing it 100% in the moment, doing it with perfect technique, with perfect breathing, with perfect form, then you are going to maximize the result of the action. And so being in the moment, which of course is a very spiritual thing, be here now, the present is the most important thing in life, being in the moment, I think. And I'm learning that it's a constant lesson. And it doesn't, I mean, the more I practice it, you know, it's very incremental in how easy it gets. It's still not easy, but it's something that it is what I aspire towards when I do anything regarding fitness or sporting. Being in the moment is the most important thing to be able to. It's a skill, basically, to me. And the more you do it, the better you get. Like any skill, you have to practice it, and that's the bottom line. And I think it's the same with meditation. It's the same with just trying to be happy in the moment. It's if you can keep your mind coming back to the now, the present, this very moment, you know, what happened in the past, what happens in the future, is all all that mind stuff is basically irrelevant. If you can come back to the present and see how lucky you are in this moment, then I think that's a big part of being content and happy in life.
I love that you combine the spiritual and meditation element with fitness. Okay, Chin, so we are heading towards the end of the podcast, and I've got three more questions for you. And the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, you know, as I get older, the body doesn't respond like it used to. So I basically, I'm slow. I get up very early. I usually get up with the sun. And first thing is basically have some coffee and a very light snack. A banana and almonds is what I first eat in the morning. So I wake up with that and I go for a walk. I come home and I do some more stretching, some exercises, and then have a little sit. And then shower, breakfast, and go about my day, whatever it is. So that's the way it is these days. But in the old days, I could bounce out of bed and do a bunch of sit-ups and push-ups and or whatever, you know, do some martial arts. And you know, it's not like that anymore.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, I just like to sit quietly. Preferably do a little movement first. In the old days, anything that had a lot of movement before the quiet is what I enjoyed. And there's several meditations that do that, several Osho meditations that do that. My preference is usually to sit in meditation in a group. I go on a Sunday morning here in Mevlana, or at Mutribo's house, and it's just sitting. And my preference is to just sit quietly and for an hour, and that's it. That's and watch my breathing or whatever it is, you know, come back to the moment and just you know, watch the mind, just be the observer, just sit. That's what I like to do.
Okay, so the last question is, you leave the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Well, what's always attracted me about Osho, besides his extraordinary lectures and just being around him and Darshan and in the lectures themselves, is his community, the people he brought to him. I can say I was never really a devotee as much as a participant in his experiment. I adore the people who he brought to him, who came to his community. This is the biggest, the most important thing, the part of the experience has been who the people he brought to him, the people who are around him. I still, in my life, everywhere I go, almost all my friends are sannyasins. And it's just an amazing thing to have that wherever I go in the world, I have people that I have a shared experience with. There's a common denominator of him and our experience. And we'll always have that. And no one can take it away from us. And it was the most unique thing probably on the planet. And I feel extremely grateful to be part of it, but mostly because of all the wonderful friends that I have in the world. And now as I get older, that I'm able to be around them and share with them life right now. And yeah, it's the people that he brought to him, the community, that's been a blessing in my life. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
That's wonderful. And I have to say that for me personally, I feel the same. My best friends are all sannyasins. And in fact, most of the people around me are sannyasins. And I've got best friends of 70, 80 years old. But, you know, we have this heart-to-heart connection. And it doesn't matter the age difference, and it's wonderful. So thank you so much for this. Mm-hmm. So Chin, we are at the end of the show, and it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and the story about Osho driving was hilarious. And so really thank you so much for sharing your love for Osho, and these little details of Osho, the man behind the wheel. So sending you lots of love and a big hug, and thanks again for sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Swaram. I hope we meet someday and have a nice hug.
Absolutely. We are not too far away, you know.
That's right.
Singapore, so hopefully we can make it happen.
Yes, that'll be wonderful. All the best.
And you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Take care, mate.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love of Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveofshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.